Roland, action.
Roger.
Haven't you heard of suspension of disbelief?
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Sequel Bait Podcast. I am Robert.
And I'm Richard. And this is a podcast where we take turns pitching a sequel to a movie, and then take turns trying to alter each other's pitch with some out-of-touch producer's notes. And I'm sure hilarity will ensue.
Yeah, something for sure will ensue. So this week we are doing Gravity, the 2013 film directed by Alfonso Cuarón, starring Sandra Bullock and George Clooney, about two astronauts that are untethered in space and have to try to survive to get back down to Earth. So without further ado, Richard, would you like to go first in pitching a potential sequel to Gravity?
I'm looking something up real quick.
Okay. Are you looking up how many people are in space right now? Because the answer is six.
No. Not saying you're wrong. That's just not what I was looking up. Because I'll be honest, I forgot to title it until just now. And so this title came up in the past 60 seconds. The title of my sequel to Gravity will just be called Kamchatka.
What?
Kamchatka.
Kamchatka.
K-A-M-C-H-A-T-K-A.
Okay.
It's a region in eastern Russia.
Ah.
So my idea picks up about 150 or so years after the first one.
Whoa. So we're way in the future now.
Yeah. At least 100 years. The exact time isn't super important, but at least 100 years in the future.
Okay.
Following two characters named, we'll just say Sandra and Alfonso, just because.
I wonder where those names came from.
Because it's not super important.
Nah.
Anyway, the movie opens with a shot of Earth from space, but there's a bunch of debris surrounding it.
Mm.
And the crew that we're following, this two-person crew, is helping to clean up the debris. Like, the ship comes onto frame, and they're helping clear some of the debris out of orbit.
Ooh, a space janitor.
Yeah, that's basically it. And eventually, they come across this large piece of debris that they find out is actually a space station.
Ooh.
That nobody knows where it came from. It's not in any records. It's designed weird. It's big and blocky. And as they get closer and using their lights to sort of try to investigate it, they find that it is riddled with pockmarks, meaning that it is old enough to have been there when the event happened, but
Ooh.
It's got these big, like, armor plates on it, which makes no sense if you know anything about space travel, how hard it is to build a space station and weight problems and all that.
Now, yeah, not even Elon Musk has enough money to get that kind of ship up there.
But when they get closer to one of the airlocks, so they realize that a large chunk of the station seems to be missing, so it's not completely devoid of any kind of damage. And they get close to one of the airlocks, and they realize that it's a Russian station, and specifically a Soviet station, because there are the hammer and sickle sort of emblazoned on the side.
Oh.
They go inside to investigate, and all the power is off. But using their, like, the helmet lights, they see that in the airlock there are something like a dozen spacesuits hung up, all with different names.
A dozen?
So it's a really big crew. But one of them is a stark white, and they look closely at it, and there's a name tag on it that says Matt Kowalski.
Oh, so George Clooney made it back into the space station.
So they go around and they investigate the ship a little further, and they start noticing some interior damage as well, but that's not consistent with any sort of debris strike. You know, it's almost like control consoles have just been destroyed and sort of almost torn apart. And they start finding blood.
Oh, God.
Like really old, dried blood on the walls and everything. They go into another room that seems to be the only room in the station that has power. Through the minimal lighting in that room, they realize there's a whole bunch of tubes around the walls. And as they look into one of the tubes and maybe, like, wipe off the exterior condensation or something, they realize that there's a person inside.
Is it Matt Damon from Interstellar?
No, it is George Clooney
yes!
from Batman.
We have to blow up this rocket before it turns Gotham into a crater.
No. they realize George Clooney's character is in, like, this cryogenic freezing pod.
Wow.
And so they turn the station back on. They unfreeze Matt. After a few minutes of him sort of getting his bearings, he looks around and notices that all the lights are on. And he's like, what the fuck have you done? You don't understand what you have just done. And then all of a sudden, at the other end of the room, through a sealed bulkhead, you hear the whole, just a fucking slam. Like something slams into this bulkhead, It dents it out slightly. And as they quickly escape the room and are trying to seal the door behind them, the door flies off its hinges, and out comes this, like, 15-foot bear.
Wait, what? A bear? A space bear?
As it just comes, like, launching through, because, you know, there's no gravity on the station, so it's just, like, spiraling towards them. They, like, get the thing shut, but it, like, breaks through, and the rest of the movie is them trying to escape alien style from this gigantic Siberian bear.
Space bear.
And so the reason why the movie's named Kamchatka is because that's a region in Siberia where some Eastern Siberian bears are. And over the course of the movie, talking to Matt and looking through some computer files, because they start finding all the dead Russians just torn into pieces and everything. And they start realizing that this was like a Cold War era space station that was constructed in the dying days of the Soviet Union. And so few people knew about it that when the Soviet Union collapsed, everybody forgot it was here. Which, again, makes no sense whatsoever.
It's movie logic.
Just given the amount of people that it takes to build a space station, you couldn't keep it quiet.
Yeah, you hear that, conspiracy theorists? It just doesn't add up.
But we're ignoring that fact because it's boring.
Oh, yeah. Because movies.
Act whatever is like a mini flashback of Matt / George Clooney recounting his adventure that led him to this station, because if you remember, he was pretty low on oxygen, so we'll say he just barely made it, which makes no sense.
Barely made it?
Stop it. Basically, he just drifted and essentially bumped into this station, got inside, found all the dead Russians, and got chased by this bear that was loose. He manages to trap this bear into, like, this giant freezing chamber. And then he decides to freeze himself because he knows that there's really no way he can get back. But we find out also that the reason why the events of the first movie happened were because the Russians, claiming they were shooting a satellite, tried to fire a missile at this station to knock it out.
Oh.
And blew off a big chunk of it that caused the Kessler effect from the first movie.
Huh, so it wasn't a spy satellite, it was the secret
space station. It's like a secret research station, like armored ridiculous research station,
armored
where they tested
bear cage
on Siberian
space.
Bears. Yes. And maybe they even find, like, a whole bunch of other frozen crazy animals, like a giant moose with machine guns for eyes or something. I don't know. But anyway, the third act of the movie involves them hatching this plan to sort of blow the bear out this airlock. So through a series of maneuvers and some chase scenes, they manage to blow the bear out of the airlock, and they escape. They get back to Earth. The end. Matt Kowalski / George Clooney now has to come into his own in a world that is, you know, decades and decades after he became frozen.
So it becomes Demolition Man when he gets back.
Yeah, that's basically it. The movie's title could just be something like Ursa Major.
It's a spoiler of sorts.
Well, the bear would be spoiled in the trailer. So, because we got to get people in the seats, Robert.
If I saw a space bear in the trailer, yeah, I'd go see that opening night. So in my story, I wanted to focus on what was happening with the crew of the International Space Station during the events of Gravity. And this is sort of a prequel-ish kind of thing. It's more of like an alternate perspective story.
Uh-huh.
The title of this one is based on a Neil deGrasse Tyson tweet, who famously tweeted out a bunch of space facts about Gravity, much to a lot of people's chagrin, because Neil deGrasse Tyson is a scientific troll in that way. And he said the title gravity should actually be changed to angular momentum. So I'm actually going to simplify it and just title this movie Momentum.
Okay.
And there's a thematic element to that. So writing this thing, I actually had to do a lot of research. There was a Gravity fan wiki page, and they did things like they analyzed the International Space Station patch and found a bunch of names on it.
Oh, so, and found out which mission it was and who would have been in charge at that time.
Exactly, and there are six names on there. So one half of the crew is made of two Americans, our main character Hayes, and there's Villalobos, and then we have the Japanese astronaut Takemitsu. The second half is purely Russian. It's cosmonauts Demidov, Sukharov, and the ISS commander, who is unnamed in the movie, but I'm going to name him after my graduate film professor, Eugene Lazarev.
Yeah.
Rest in peace.
Okay.
So Lazarev is, yeah. He's actually, he did a voice in Call of Duty.
Oh, wow.
He was in films like The Saint, Iron Man 2. Yeah, awesome, awesome guy. Okay, so the following events take place in the days leading up to the Russian satellite destruction and the opening of Gravity, which causes the debris strike, which causes Sandra Bullock to be detached, and all this other crazy shit that happens. So the Space Shuttle Explorer has just launched. It's carrying the characters Ryan Stone and Matt Kowalski to orbit. That's Sandra Bullock and George Clooney, respectively. So after overseeing the successful launch and orbit of Explorer, the Russians receive a private transmission. And after hearing the message, their once jovial demeanor changes to something a little more somber. Hayes notices this right away and asks if anything is wrong, but they decline that it's anything serious. But of course, it doesn't sit well with the Americans, so Hayes and Villalobos privately contact Houston to see if there's anything going on. But Mission Control, played by Ed Harris, of course, radios back, something is going on. There was a cyber attack in both the Russian and American defense networks. Nobody knows who struck first, but until the information becomes more clear, everybody right now is on a need-to-know basis.
Sure.
The Russians are increasingly more and more talking to themselves in their native tongue, and so this is very inaccurate, but in my story, the two American astronauts don't speak Russian. Wrong, 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 wrong. That's incredibly inaccurate to how this actually works in real life.
I was going to say, for all your research.
That's the dramatic liberty I'm taking here, is that the two Americans, for some reason, don't know how to speak Russian. However, the one that does is Takemitsu.
Okay.
He's actually the neutral party in this whole thing, but he actually does understand Russian. And the Americans implore him, can you please eavesdrop on what's going on here? So he reluctantly agrees. Now, over the course of Takemitsu's eavesdropping, he finds that Lazarev and Sokurov are definitely more tense and secretive, while Demidov keeps to his biological plant studies. And then one day, Takemitsu overhears the two talking about a spy satellite.
Oh, okay.
Now, once this is relayed to the Americans decide, okay, enough is enough, and they go confront Lazarev about it. But things begin to heat up in a tense argument, during which Takemitsu is eventually outed as the eavesdropper.
Oh, no.
And this leads to our first physical confrontation, with Sokurov and Villalobos duking it out. And from the science module, Demidov floats in to see what the commotion is all about.
Okay.
And suddenly he is accidentally pushed hard, flying into a nearby wall and striking a piece of equipment right in the head. Blood floating out of his skull at a horrifying rate. Lazarev warns the Americans to keep to their module and take no further action here.
Sure.
Hayes and Villalobos coldly return to the other side of the station, while Takemitsu, ashamed of what has happened, isolates himself in a separate module, with Sokurov watching him with rage in his eyes.
Oh shit.
At this point, the Americans debate telling Houston about the spy satellite, but agree that doing so is only going to make things worse.
Oh, gotcha.
But they notice something is wrong. Nobody has seen Takemitsu for hours.
Oh no.
While the Russians keep to themselves with the critically injured Demidov, the Americans search module to module for any sign of Takemitsu.
Yeah.
And as Hayes looks through the storage area, he finds Takemitsu underneath several bags, floating limp and with an elastic band wrapped tightly around his neck.
Oh, okay.
Of course, it's not clear if foul play was actually involved, but this pushes the Americans over the edge, and they radio Houston everything that has just happened, including the news of the Russian spy satellite. And in return, the Russians contact Moscow, and a missile is launched, destroying the spy satellite and causing the Kessler effect that sparks the events of Gravity.
Ah.
So, Act 3, the debris is inbound. So now we have two Russians and the two Americans, both suiting up. The Russians get into their Soyuz, they're going through their checklist, and they realize that their chute has somehow been deployed. Now, this is the Soyuz in Gravity that Sandra Bullock gets into. Remember, the chute has been deployed already.
Yeah.
And it's unclear if this was somehow an American sabotage or if this was damage from the debris.
Nice.
They abandon ship, and leaving Demidov's suit inside. And this is actually the suit that Sandra Bullock wears in Gravity.
Okay.
If you look closely at the patch, it says L. Demidov on it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So Hayes and Villalobos detach the Soyuz. Lazarev and Sokurov are in pursuit using their jetpacks. They go to the outside of the door, and they're banging on the door. They're like, let us in. Like, listen, we can put our differences behind us. This is a matter of survival now. So now we have Sokurov trying to open the door from the outside, and Villalobos trying to stop him. And keep in mind, the cabin has not been depressurized yet. What happens when you open a door of a spaceship with atmosphere inside, Richard?
Explodes.
Well, yeah, everybody gets sucked out. So Villalobos and Sokurov both get sucked right out the door. So now Lazarev climbs inside. They shut the door. They lock it. They repressurize the cabin. And now it's Lazarev and Hayes in the Soyuz together. Enemies falling back to Earth, needing to rely on each other to survive the reentry.
Nice.
The end of our film has them crash landing into the Australian outback in pretty neutral-ish territory. A team's coming to collect them, and these two are fighting in the middle of the desert, trying to kill one another, and the Australians split them apart and asking, what's going on here? What, like, why are you two fighting? Where are the others? And eventually explain to Lazarev and Hayes that this cyber attack that sparked this whole thing was actually not caused by neither country, but rather was a simple glitch.
Oh, no.
They're fighting. All this death and destruction haven't been totally been in vain. And that is momentum. Okay, so the producers really love your idea, Richard.
Excellent.
However, despite how absurd it is, they think it may be still a little too heavy-handed. So they want to add some levity to the situation. And one of the producers, for some reason, he's fixated on this idea, but he really wants to get George Clooney in drag. So.
Oh, no.
You need to somehow work in this element into your plot. For what reason and how does George Clooney end up in drag in space?
All right. When George Clooney shows up to the space station, due to the missile hit, has left the, we'll call it a nuclear reactor in the station, because the Soviets are powering it through a nuclear reactor, like a submarine almost. Mm. So the reactor is melting down, and he finds that among doing tests on animals, they were also trying to develop tests to radiation-proof clothing of different kinds, just to kind of keep the Russian people safe in the event of a nuclear fallout. Mm. And the only clothes that have survived are like some really nice looking dresses or something. And so in order to go in and try to fix this reactor, he has to wear these like tested radiation proof like clothing, lead lined or I don't know, some bullshit, to try to stop this reactor.
So George Clooney in a dress in zero gravity fixing a nuclear reactor.
Look, this is your idea.
Yeah, that's true.
Mr.
Yeah,
producer.
Yeah.
Marvel has this really good way of making dramatic moments while at the same time comedic. So, what I need you to do is give me a musical number about halfway through to three quarters of the way through your movie to sort of give it some levity that it needs.
Okay, I got it. After Demidov has been mortally wounded, things are very tense, and the Russians turn on their radios and start playing the Red Russian Choir.
Oh, okay.
Singing some very strong Soviet ballads and cranking it louder and louder, and because it's the space station, the Americans can hear fucking everything.
Sure.
So then the Americans decide to counter them with some Garth Brooks and blast it as loud as possible. And it becomes this back and forth between the two factions when out of nowhere, Takamitsu shows up playing some J-pop.
What? Okay.
Like an anime opening, and suddenly everybody...
And then it just becomes like a Bollywood thing.
Yeah. Okay, it is with much gravitas that we end our Gravity sequel podcast. I know a lot of our pitches just sucked the air out of the room. but yeah, we want to turn to you all. Which sequel reigns supreme? You can actually vote on which pitch you would rather see on our Twitter page, which you can follow us at SequelBait. That's BATE, because we...
our children.
Yes, horribly immature.
And as always, if you guys have any movies that you would like us to pitch sequels to, just hit us up on Twitter.
Thanks for listening, everybody. See you next time.
See ya.